Want to learn how you can make smarter decisions with your money? Well, I've got the podcast for you. I'm Sean Piles, and I host NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Our show features our team of nerds, personal finance experts in credit cards, banking, investing, and more. And they'll help you make the most of your money while cutting through the clutter and misinformation in today's world of personal finance. You'll get clarity on strategies to help you build your wealth, invest wisely, shop for financial products, and plan for major life events. Listen to NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The Box of Oddities is now a CastBox original. CastBox is the fastest-growing, highest-rated podcast app on both iOS and Android, where you can find all your favorite podcasts. You can listen to The Box of Oddities wherever you access your podcasts. But we hope you give CastBox a try. The curator is greatly pleased with CastBox. We think it's the best.
What follows may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
The world is full of stories. Stories of mysteries. Of curiosities. Of oddities. Join Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth for the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected, as they lift the lid and cautiously peer inside the Box of Oddities.
Okay. Dude, guy.
Dudette, chick.
I've got to say, I've got some big feelings happening.
You do?
They're coming up. They're bubbling. There's some bubbling big feelings.
You have effervescent emotions?
Yep.
Okay. What's going on?
Well, all right. So, I just can't. So we're on the social meds, Instagram, Facebook, Goodreads, Twitter. And on our Instagram page, we got this message from Queen V, 1017, and it just blew my mind. And it's the one that I showed you in the car earlier.
Oh.
And I just can't, I can't stop. It's just, it's affected me so deeply, and I just can't get over it.
Do you want to share it?
I don't know if I want to read it verbatim, but to basically just said that she hopes that we make our way to Baltimore, and she'd love to meet us because the podcast has helped her get through a tough time in her life when her boyfriend died, and everything that she encountered on TV and in music was making her think of him. And so podcasts were a way that she was able to kind of escape. And we were one of them. And that just kind of, it hit me hard.
Yeah.
Hit me hard, brother. That's brother, man. I get awkward when I have feelings. And I call you things like brother, man. I'm sorry.
No, I get that. What an honor that is. Yeah. That's amazing. Now, it goes on to say she's doing better now, and yeah, that's okay, good.
Yeah, it's just amazing that you guys are letting us into your lives, and it's a big deal that, I don't know, it's a big deal for me.
It's a big deal for me, too. Yeah. We don't take that for granted. And yes, we hope we can get to Baltimore, too. We're trying to put something together where maybe we go down for the opening of the new museum, the new Oddities Museum that's opening down there in October. Whew. Any hoozle, let's get right to the show before we get any more emotional. It's the Box of Oddities, of course. And this episode, you go first.
Yeah, it's funny that we are actually talking about big things and big emotions and how I get all awkward and weird. And it's something I've discussed with my therapist, is how I use humor to deflect from real emotions. Well, it's a self-defense mechanism, and that's what we're talking about today.
Self-defense mechanisms. Okay.
Yeah, but mostly in the animal world. Entirely in the animal world.
Oh, okay.
All right. So let's start, shall we?
with a frosty cold craft beer from Gagan Brothers Brewery.
I love the smiling Irish bastard. Okay, now I'm ready.
All right.
There are so many amazing ways that animals do, and anything. If I wanted to search interesting animal burps, there would be an article about animals that burp in an amazing way.
We live in a magical world.
We really do.
The information age.
And so this is something that I've always found interesting, and I thought we'd delve into it just a smidge. And we'll start today with the leaf beetle family.
Okay.
So in the leaf beetle family, the larvae find a interesting way of protecting themselves under a protective shield of their own making, literally. It's called a fecal shield. Many species use it. They start from the moment they are born building this shield. Some can build their entire shield in just 12 hours.
That's incredible.
They cover themselves in their poop in various ways. Uh-huh. Some leaf beetles just have kind of like a protective coating, if you will. But it's feces, yeah. So it's not pleasant.
No.
And some can kind of expel their feces in such a way that it hooks over their body, kind of like a large poop umbrella.
I would love to be able to do that.
I'm actually surprised that you can't. I've seen what you leave in there sometimes.
You have not. I'm very careful about that.
Not as careful as I am.
That's true. That's true. You have to do a walkthrough every time I go into the bathroom if you've been in there within like the last hour or so.
I'm so afraid that you're going to see my poop. I don't know why. I know you probably have too, and I'm just not going to.
We've been married for a few years now. Yeah. We're past that point, you know?
Yeah, it's true. You do fart in the same room as me every occasionally, every once in a while now.
Yeah.
I think usually, we were together for like 6 years before you farted around me.
That's true.
And even now, most of the time, you'll put your butt into the bathroom and then fart.
Yeah, I'll turn the fan on. And I'm just being considerate.
You know.
So anyway, back to the poop.
And then some will kind of like weave the poop over themselves in a dramatic fashion. Anyway, it's interesting, and most of the leaf beetles do it.
So basically what they do is they protect themselves by surrounding themselves with a bunch of shit.
Yes.
Just like Congress.
I knew that's where you're going. I just knew it. You've been on a wicked kick today.
Well, you know, it's been busy in the world of politics.
The slow loris, one of my absolute favorites. So magical and the cutest thing with the eyes and the fingers, and I just love them. They are very vulnerable to predators, though, because they do move so slowly. So they have poison glands built into their armpits.
I want those, too.
I know.
I want a hook poop thing and poisonous armpits.
So what the loris will do is he will jam his hands under his armpits when he gets uncomfortable, just like Mary Catherine Gallagher, and then rub himself all over with the poison, and especially on the teeth. So if he gets a chance to bite you, you're likely going to go into anaphylactic shock.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Hagfishes. The hagfish I learned a lot about today, and we don't have time to really get into it, but they are a family of marine prevertebrates, and they hold a unique evolutionary position in that they share a joint ancestor with the entire vertebrate lineage. And they've existed for about, I shouldn't have started drinking. And they've
going to get you another smiling Irish bastard.
And they've existed for about 300 million years. Now, what they do is they expel a slimy substance from their body. It mixes with the water, expands, and then proceeds to choke fish out as it moves into the fish's gills.
Holy crap.
And this was thought to be just a self-defense mechanism, but they've recently discovered that the hagfish actually hunts this way as well. So they'll... and then...
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
There's so many weird, almost alien-type life forms on Earth that we really don't understand.
Especially in the sea.
Especially in the sea.
We don't know what's going on in there.
It's deep.
It's big.
But, you know, if you took something like the hagfish, if you found a hagfish that was, say, 12 feet long,
yeah,
That'd be terrifying. Or about one of those fish that have like the
anglerfish?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are nightmare things for me. They're nightmare things.
Octopetheus delatron totally mangled that, but whatever. It's a kind of squid. And he's a beautiful red animal with hook-lined arms, which grow to about 5 inches in length. Now, he has the ability, like all squid do, to squirt out that ink when he's being threatened. Right. But he also has the ability to drop his limbs. So if Yes, if he's being attacked by something, he can just let go of that leg and move on with his day. The leg, meanwhile, will continue to flail around and act all like, ah, I've been caught. Don't eat me. So that the predator is confused. And, you know, yeah, big squiddies swimming away, but he's still got this thing that he's dealing with, and it's very confusing, and there's ink everywhere.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this.
Well, you know how iguanas can drop their tails, right?
I've heard that, yes.
Yeah, it's the same kind of idea. The Iberian ribbed newt has developed a very amazing and disturbing self-defense mechanism.
Is he ribbed for his protection?
Yes.
Ah.
Now, when he's in danger, he will kind of, he'll puff up a little bit, and then he'll push his ribs through his skin and use them as weapons.
No.
The exposed bones are then covered with a poisonous substance that he expels from his body, which has the ability to kill predators.
My God. That's a nightmare thing.
Right out from his sides.
Pew.
Pew, pew, pew. Similarly, the hairy frog. The hairy frog is described as hairy because when he's in a mating season, he gets these like kind of stringy things in his midsection. They look like hairs, but they're not. Now, he has the ability to crack his own toe bones and push them through his hand skin to form sharp claws. Yeah, just like Wolverine.
That is so cool.
Yeah. It's great for warding off would-be attackers. It's, though, not clear what he does with those after the attack is over. It's thought that he's able to kind of relax the bones and they slide back under the skin and then the skin just has to heal.
Wow.
But they're pretty good at scuttling off after their weird.
No, why did they evolve Wolverine that way? Why didn't they just evolve to have claws?
Like claws? Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Huh?
See, I would give up my curly poop umbrella and poisonous armpits to be able to do that.
Well, yeah. That sounds amazing.
It does.
He's an X-Men frog.
That would make the line at the grocery store a lot more manageable.
Ma'am, you have 16 items. Fa-ching! All right. Pygmy sperm whales. So pygmy sperm whales, why are you laughing?
Because you said pygmy sperm whale.
All right. Pygmy sperm whales are adorable. And this is news to me. I didn't know about this self-defense mechanism in pygmy sperm whales. So you know how anal glands work? You like cats every once in a while.
I've not studied it, but I have a general idea of properties of an anal gland.
So anal glands sometimes build up like secretion. This is not the science way to say what I'm saying, by the way. They have like this anal gland juice in there, and it's real bad. And a couple times in my life, I've encountered cat anal gland juice. Sometimes things go wrong in a cat, and they need to be expressed or something, and it's real bad. It's probably the worst smell I can imagine.
That in itself is a great defense mechanism.
It's true. So anyway, pygmy sperm whales have a very similar deal where they've got this anal juice that they shoot out when they're threatened. And then they kind of like swish around to kind of stir up the water and they swish it into their predator's faces. So the predator's all like, I'm going to eat you. And then pygmy sperm whale's like, and then just swish it into his face.
Yeah.
They're clever.
Taste my anal juice, predator.
It sounds like a 1980s movie insult, like, taste my anal juice.
Like Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Now,
I pictured Corey Feldman saying it.
I think that that would, even more than Wolverine, that would be a great X-Man. Instead of, like, you know, the claws coming out of his hands, he subdues the villain by squirting anal juice on him. What would be his X-Man name?
Shitstain.
One of the lesser X-Men. Juice Man.
Anal Ally.
Butt Plug.
No, because it couldn't be plugged.
I just wanted to say Butt Plug.
Oh, okay. The Bombardier Beetle is our final feature for today. And he stores in his bits something called hydroquinones. I don't know what that is. Hydrogen peroxide and a mix of enzymes that catalyze inside of him into an explosive reaction that he shoots out of his anus at almost boiling point at the
I've had a few nights like that. Usually it had to do with chili.
So not only is it like this noxious chemical that he can spray out of his body, I mean, he builds it inside of his body. It's amazing. And I don't understand how he's not ill all the time. He must have terrible IBS. But
Like shoot out of him like a fire extinguisher? Like it's under pressure?
Yes.
Oh, man.
Right? It means business. And it's right out of his butthole.
Another great X-Man. I don't know which of those creatures' superpowers I want the most.
The thing is, it's not a superpower. It's the amazing, oh God, this is going to sound so corny. It is the amazing world that we live in. I am.
Wow. That sounds like a Walt Disney short from the early 60s.
For reals, yo. The things that nature creates is mind-blowing. And every single thing has its own thing, and it can show you how amazing it is if you just give it time.
The world is a carousel of color.
I know that you're mocking me right now.
I'm not mocking you. No, I firmly believe that. And you know I would never mock you, as far as you know.
Anyway, that's all I got.
That's amazing.
Yep.
That is totally amazing. I'm going with the pygmy sperm whale, though. I want his superpower.
I think the ribbed newt is pretty, pretty incredible.
Yeah. And if by incredible you mean freaking terrifying, yes.
And now, that thing in the middle.
That thing in the middle, strange deaths caused by everyday objects. Number 5, death by soup. In Rio de Janeiro, an 88-year-old Brazilian woman entered the hospital in 2012 having a stroke. She died of a pulmonary embolism when hospital workers injected her with soup rather than putting it in her feeding tube.
No!
Ew.
That's horrible. Oh, that's awful.
At least it wasn't a hearty stew.
Number 4, 16-year-old Jonathan Capewell of England died in 1998 after suffering a heart attack brought upon by his overzealousness for personal hygiene. He became obsessed with deodorant, and at the time of his death, the teen had 10 times the lethal dosage of propane and butane in his blood because he used so much spray deodorant, the gases built up in his body.
Number 3, a 24-year-old Oakland, California resident was killed after being struck in the face by an airborne fire hydrant. He was just walking down the street, passing car, had struck the fire hydrant. Water pressure shot the hydrant up into the air and hit him right in the face.
Number 2. Soccer enthusiast Paulo Ricardo Gomes da Silva was killed just weeks before Brazil hosted the World Cup 2014. Rowdy fans had torn out one of 3 of the stadium's toilet bowls and threw it into the stands, hitting da Silva and killing him instantly.
Never heave a flush into a sporting event. Those are just words that really we need to
sing throughout the ages.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And number 1, a 55-year-old Argentinian shepherd was found naked in bed, dead, with a scarecrow. A police spokesman said, quote, "I initially thought there were 2 bodies, and then I realized that one was a scarecrow wearing lipstick and a long-haired wig." Alberto had attached a prosthetic penis to the oversized Halloween staple. The man died during sex with a scarecrow. Scarecrow sex.
Thanks for summing that up.
It was sex with a scarecrow. Basically a pile of laundry and hay.
That got a little upsetting.
Got weird,
didn't
it?
Toward the end.
Yeah.
The Box of Oddities with Kat and Jethro Gilligan Toth.
You know, we've been approached a number of times by companies that wanted to advertise on the Box of Oddities, mm-hmm. but we've been reluctant to until something came along that we, first of all, believed in, and secondly, thought might interest you, our freak listener.
And we're super excited about this. Care of. Care of is a monthly subscription vitamin service that delivers completely personalized vitamin and supplement packs right to your door.
You go online and you fill out this extremely enjoyable questionnaire. They ask you about your lifestyle. They ask you about things that you do. They just want to get to know you. Are there any specific needs you want to address in your vitamins? You know, like bone health, intestinal health. And then they put together a custom-made daily pack of vitamins for you that are personalized.
And each of the packs has printed on it, first of all, your name, and like a motivational
a good thought for the day.
Yeah.
What was the first one that you got?
Yeah. It said, today's challenge, start reading a new book today. If you usually read fiction, try nonfiction and vice versa. It's just good ideas and good thoughts for your day.
One of the things that we really believe in here on the Box of Oddities is putting something good out into the world. And this is one of the things that made us decide that we would love to have Care of as a sponsor. And that's that a portion of their sales go toward Good Plus Foundation, which provides expectant mothers in need with valuable prenatal vitamins. That's pretty incredible.
And there's vegan and vegetarian supplement options available to match your dietary needs. So we chose the vegetarian vitamin packs as we are vegetarian. And it's super easy. It's customized. There's an online quiz, which you know I love.
She loves quizzes. She'll often just sign me up for things so she can do the quiz. But in this case, I'm glad she did. And I'll tell you something. Maybe it's more psychological than anything else. But once I started taking these supplements, knowing that they were tailor-made for me, it made me want to eat better. It made me want to start exercising because I knew I was doing something good for myself already.
For 25% off your first month of personalized Care of vitamins, visit takecareof.com and enter promo code BOX.
That's takecareof.com, promo code BOX. You'll save 25%. And welcome Care of as the first sponsor of the Box of Oddities.
Promo code BOX.
Coming to you from the very tip of North America, this is the Box of Oddities.
On the night of June 11th, 1962, three inmates from Alcatraz Prison lowered a handmade rubber raft into San Francisco Bay.
Are we talking about the goddamn escape from Alcatraz?
Yes. And disappeared.
Yeah!
They sailed off into eternity.
Or did they?
Or did they?
Or did they? Tell me all about it.
There were four inmates involved. John and Clarence Anglin, Frank Morris, and Alan West. Now, Alan West wasn't able to make the final escape. And we'll get to that in just a minute. So three of them ultimately broke out of the prison and leapt into San Francisco Bay. The four inmates began formulating an escape strategy, according to Wikipedia, under the leadership of Morris, the orchestral member of the operation, after they were assigned adjacent cells in December of 1961. They had known each other previously in another federal penitentiary in Atlanta.
Okay.
They worked at night over the next 6 months. They gradually widened the ventilation shafts in their cells.
So this was like behind a grate, right?
Well, yes. And what they did, they used saw blades that they found discarded on the prison grounds, spoons that were stolen from the commissary, and a drill that was improvised from a motor of a broken vacuum cleaner. They concealed the holes with cardboard and paint that made it look like it was more masonry. It was a ventilation shaft, but they widened it and then covered it up. This is kind of cool. They masked the noise of them digging and sawing with Morris's accordion playing. He would just grab his accordion and play a polka tune, and they would dig away. They widened the holes, opening into an unguarded utility corridor behind the cell tier. From the corridor, they climbed to the roof of the cell block inside the building where they set up a small workshop.
Right, that's right. They had like a treehouse where they did their work.
It was a fort. They had a prison fort. There they assembled a variety of stolen and donated materials, including more than 50 raincoats that they crafted into makeshift life preservers based on a design they saw in Popular Mechanics in the prison library. And they also built a 6x14-foot rubber raft, and they sealed the seams that they stitched together using heat from nearby steam pipes.
Wow.
That would just hold it up to the hot pipe and it would melt together. They stole a small accordion-like concertina from another inmate to serve as bellows to inflate the raft. That's ingenious. They built makeshift paddles from scrap wood and some stolen screws. Finally, they climbed a ventilation shaft leading to a large fan and a grill that led out onto the roof. It was cut away by removing the rivets underneath that held it in place.
Do we have any idea what the timeline was? Like how long it took them to get from this step to this step and how long they worked on this thing or the next thing?
All I've been able to find is the overall timeline, which was about 6 months. They started in December and it was June 11th when they made their escape.
I see.
Now this is ingenious enough, but this really gets quite creative. They concealed their absences while they were working outside their cells. And after the escape itself, by sculpting dummy heads out of kind of a homemade papier-mâché mixture of soap and toothpaste and concrete dust and toilet paper, giving them a realistic appearance with paint that they got from the maintenance shop and hair from the barber shop. And they would pile towels and clothes and things underneath of their blankets and then put these papier-mâché heads on their pillows. So when they were out digging, guards would walk by, they'd do a head count. Literally, there'd be heads there. No people, but heads.
It's so smart. And also an egregious lack of real security in what should have been a very secure jail.
I think that because of its reputation, Alcatraz being on an island and inescapable, maybe some of the guards got a little lazy.
Well, I mean, they were just leaving saw blades around. Come on.
Yeah, found them on the prison yard.
Come on.
So on the night of June 11th, 1962, all the preparations were completed. The men initiated their escape. West had used cement to shore up crumbling concrete around the vent opening, and it had hardened and it narrowed the hole in fixing the grill in place. By the time he was able to remove the grill and rewiden the hole sufficiently, the others had left without him. He exited to the roof and then returned to his cell around sunrise and went to sleep. He later, I guess, fully cooperated with authorities and told them all how they did it.
Wow.
As a result, he was not punished for his role. Now, from the service corridor, Morris and the Anglins climbed the ventilation shaft to the roof. Guards heard a loud crash as they broke out of the shaft. But since nothing further was heard, the source of the noise was not investigated. They hauled their gear with them. They descended 50 feet to the ground by sliding down a kitchen vent pipe and then climbed two 12-foot barbed wire perimeter fences at the northeast shoreline near the power plant, which was a blind spot in the prison's network of searchlights and gun towers.
Of course it was.
They really did their homework on this. They inflated their raft with the concertina. At some time after 10 o'clock, investigators estimated they departed in the dense fog toward their objective, Angel Island, 2 miles to the north. Now, I had read in another article that the best time for them to do this was 11 o'clock at night because the tide wasn't going out. It wasn't coming in. It was somewhat stationary.
Chill.
So they even figured out the timeline of the tides and everything. The ensuing investigation really turned up not much of anything. The escape was not discovered until the next morning because of the dummy heads. An extensive air, sea, and land search involving multiple military and law enforcement agencies was conducted over the next 10 days. On the 14th, the Coast Guard cutter picked up a paddle floating 200 yards off the southern shore of Angel Island. On the same day, in the same general locations, workers on another boat found a wallet wrapped in plastic containing names, addresses, photos of the Anglin's friends and relatives. On the 21st of June, shreds of raincoat material believed to be remains of the raft were found on the Angel Island beach. The following day, prison boat picked up a deflated life jacket made from the same material. They couldn't find anything. FBI investigators concluded that while it was theoretically possible for one or more of the inmates to have reached Angel Island, The frigid water temperature and the strong currents within the bay made it very unlikely. So they never found bodies.
Right.
And so they've just pretty much said they didn't make it. We're pretty sure. We're not positive, but we're pretty sure they didn't make it.
Mm-hmm. Allegedly. But aren't there people who, like, said that they have had correspondence with those who escaped since?
In January of this year, an article came out claiming that a letter had been received by law enforcement in 2013 from allegedly, John Anglin, one of the escaped prisoners.
Right.
Now, for some reason, they did not release that information. I guess they didn't think it was legitimate or something. Mm-hmm. They did not follow up on it. Or they did a little bit and felt, nah, this isn't the case. They didn't even bother to notify John Anglin's family that they had received this letter.
Really?
Yeah. The letter allegedly written by John Anglin came to light in January of this year, 2018. KPIX 5 in San Francisco, a CBS affiliate, got a hold of it. Here is what the letter says. My name is John Anglin. I escaped from Alcatraz, June 1962, with my brother Clarence and Frank Morris. I'm 83 years old and in bad shape. I have cancer. Yes, we all made it that night, but barely. Frank passed away in October 2005. His grave is in Alexandria under another name. My brother died in 2011. If you announce on TV that I will be promised to go to jail for no more than 1 year and get medical attention, I will write back to let you know exactly where I am. This is no joke. This is for real and honest truth. I can tell you that for 7 years I lived in North Dakota, in Fargo from 1990 to 2005, but it's just too damn cold and had to get the hell out, he said.
I get it.
I lived in Seattle for most of my years after the escape. I am in Southern California now. So his family was pissed.
Yeah.
That they didn't tell them that they had received this letter, whether it was from him or not. They should have been notified. Now, David Widner is a nephew of John and Clarence Anglin, and he said in an interview, "It's always been talked about through my family. My grandmother received roses for several years after the escape." He said, "I've really not come to a conclusion whether I believe that it's John reaching out or not. The U.S. Marshals Service says the FBI couldn't determine if it was real. The three do remain on the Marshals Service's most wanted list, along with photos of what they would look like today." But even before this letter came to light, there had been all kinds of rumors in the family that these guys survived and had moved to South America somewhere.
Yeah, the thing about the roses, the grandmother getting the roses, I remember hearing that and thinking it was weird that it hadn't been really looked into.
Yeah. According to the New York Post, Michael Esslinger, a historical researcher who has penned several books on the escape and has studied it for decades, said, "For the first 20 years I was doing research, I was very adamant that they had died. In the last 7 or 8 years, I've really changed my mind. They grew up with 14 brothers and sisters. They didn't have a lot, so they had to make do with what they had." Widner, the nephew, said, "My mom said they were like MacGyvers." He went on to say, "Our family has always believed that they made it," noting that the brothers grew up swimming in the icy waters off Tampa Bay in the wintertime. Quote, "We have a lot inside the family that we haven't shared." In 2010, another Anglin brother, Robert, made a deathbed confession to his kin. He said he had been in touch with John and Clarence several times in the first 25 years they were on the run. 4 years later, Dutch scientists took up the cause using 3D modeling of the tides and determined that, once again, if they had left around 11 o'clock, they probably could have made it.
I feel like that the quick dismissal of the idea that they had made it was an effort to kind of tamp down the failure of Alcatraz.
No, I think that's absolutely the case.
Yeah, they escaped, but there's no way they made it. Don't worry about it.
No, I guess part of Robert's deathbed confession involved a mutual acquaintance that had actually seen them in South America and had sat down with them at a bar and had a couple of drinks with them. And there was no question in this person's mind that that's who they were.
Right.
But of course, it's officially still an open case. They don't seem to really want to follow up on it at this point. They didn't follow up on that letter. And I would think that that would be the first thing that they would do.
Yeah.
Search this guy out.
Heck yes. Even if he's not legit, I mean, he's obviously in need of medical attention, and that's why he's falsifying who he is.
Yeah, okay.
Help a fella out.
Help him out. So what is your gut? Do you think that they made it?
I do.
I do too. And I really don't have anything to base it on other than these things that everybody has talked about. But it just seems to me that they would have found something after all this time. Because, yeah, I get it. You know, the ocean's a big place. And the currents are strong, but it's not like they were dropped in the middle of the ocean somewhere. They were on an island right in San Francisco Bay. And there is, I think, a decent chance for somebody, for people like this, who obviously were pretty intelligent and resourceful and did their homework. I think they made it.
Yeah. And I think that like the family saying that they had always been really like ingenuitive and had the ability to kind of make things work. The fact that they were able to escape in the first place leads me to believe that they were able to make it.
Yeah. The fact that they got out of their cells,
right,
out of the prison, over the fences and walls, down to the shoreline, in and of itself indicates how ingenious these guys were.
Yeah.
And how well thought out their plan was, even right down to the tide schedules. Pretty remarkable stuff.
Then grandma getting the roses, and yeah, I just, I think they made up.
I'm with you on that.
I don't remember, though, what they were in jail for in the first place.
Bank robbery.
Oh, see, I mean, they're not.
They robbed banks with toy guns. They came from a family, like I said, like 14 people. They didn't have a lot, so they resorted to sticking up banks, but they used toy guns. Not that I'm saying that's a good thing to do.
No.
But that was their MO. So there you have it. The Escape from Alcatraz.
Oh, we should watch that.
With Clint Eastwood?
Yeah.
Hells yeah. I'm in.
Date night.
Let's go watch it right now.
Tacos?
Tacos and a Clint Eastwood movie. Oh, it's a magical night.
Aww.
With Kat and Jethro Gallagher. Thanks for hanging out with us, Freak Family. Great to see you again. We look forward to seeing you on Thursday.
Until then, keep flying that freak flag.
Fly it proudly.
And so, let it be known that the Box of Oddities belongs to you, and its fate is in your hands. Therefore, it's been requested by those I report to beseech you for assistance. The Box of Oddities is free. We ask but one thing of you: to provide a 5-star rating and a positive review. True, that is two things. However, 'tis merely a 5-star rating and a positive review. Also, subscribe to us. Okay, so three things is all we ask. Three things, and three things only. Henceforth, the Box of Oddities commits to the telling of stories. Stories of the strange, the bizarre, the unexpected. We wish to offer our deeply felt gratitude and appreciation for your patronage. TheBoxOfOddities.com. Copyright 2018. All rights reserved.
All you need is a few minutes to start your day off with something historic when you listen to the This Day in History podcast. Every day there's a new episode for you to listen and learn about what happened that day way back when. So, listen and subscribe to This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts. That's This Day in History wherever you get your podcasts.
Have you ever wondered how inbred the Habsburgs really were? What women in the past used for birth control? Or what Queen Victoria's 9 children got up to? On the History Tea Time podcast, I profile remarkable queens and LGBTQ+ royals, explore royal family trees, and delve into women's medical history and other fascinating topics. Join me every Tuesday for History Tea Time, wherever fine podcasts are enjoyed.